The International Mastermind Association is a group of like-minded individuals who have come together based on the mastermind concept espoused in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. As masterminders, we commit to coming together as a group on a regular basis for a coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose. We come together to share knowledge with one another, support each other in setting and achieving our goals, and hold one another accountable to what we commit to do for ourselves. We set goals in 10 areas of our lives: spiritual, family, health, financial, business, civic, personal, educational, recreational, creativity. You must have goals and plans if you are going to succeed in any endeavor. After all, successful people have plans. Napoleon Hill said, quote, education, knowledge, and influence are more powerful than any exchange of money, end quote. For more information about International Mastermind Association, visit us on the web, internationalmasterminders.com, or once again, Facebook the group, International Mastermind Association.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to today's edition of the International Mastermind Association's Think and Grow Rich Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Thomasina Williams. I am the founder of Sankofa Legacy Advisors, where we help you advance generational success as your family legacy by being as intentional in cultivating your family's human capital as you are in growing your financial capital. I am pleased to welcome you to today's edition of the International Mastermind Association's Think and Grow Rich Blog Talk Radio Show, where every Saturday morning we bring you programming on the 13-step success formula outlined in Napoleon Hill's classic book, Think and Grow Rich. And we have a very special show for you today. I think you're really going to have a lot of fun with this. You know, oftentimes when we are doing the show, we'll take a specific chapter of Think and Grow Rich, which represents one particular step in Napoleon Hill's 13-step success formula. But for today's special edition, we're going to take a little bit different approach. Today, we're going to look at a topic that is near and dear to the hearts of many of you, and explore how that topic relates to the 13 principles that Napoleon Hill outlines in his book. The title of today's show is I Am Not My Hair, Where Identity, Decisions, and Think and Grow Rich Meet. I'll say that again. Today's title is I Am Not My Hair, Where Identity, Decisions, and Think and Grow Rich Meet. I told you it's going to be a fun show. Remember, if you want to share a comment or ask a question during the show, please dial the number 1 on your phone. Pressing the number 1 on your phone essentially raises your hand to let us know that you'd like to be recognized and to have your mic open. So to get us started, I am first going to introduce my 4 co-hosts for this morning's show, including the 2 people whose brainchild it was to do a show on this particular topic. And I'm sure it's going to be, as I said, an engaging and educational conversation this morning. So first, I'd like to introduce Ms. Ann McNeil, the inimitable master builder, Ann McNeil, who is the founder of the International Mastermind Association and the founder of this Blog Talk Radio show. Ann is an expert in the personal development field. She is a coach and a speaker. Her firm is called Constructively Speaking. Ann also has the distinction of being the first black woman in the state of Florida to become a licensed general contractor. She is the owner as well of MCO Construction. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, and thank you.
Our other co-host this morning is Ms. Havila Malone. Havila is an international speaker, a number one best-selling author, and a consultant who believes that self-mastery and success begin on the inside. And I love, love, love the name of Havila's company, which is also the guiding principle by which she lives her life. and that is be proof of what's possible. Good morning, Havila. In addition to Havila, we have as co-host as well, Ms. Robin Donaldson. Robin is the owner of Renew Construction Services, a full-service construction cleanup and hauling firm. Additionally, we have with us this morning Ms. Angelique Frost. Angelique is the owner and creative director of Remarje Luxury Bead Line, which is a line of handcrafted women's bracelets. Good morning, lady.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And as I said, I know we're going to have a fun show this morning. I want to introduce now our very special guest who's going to help us to dive into this topic. We have with us this morning interdisciplinary scholar Dr. Noliwe Looks. Noliwe is a tenured Cornell University where she is the director of Africana Studies. She teaches both in the Africana Studies program and in the Feminist, Gender, and Sexuality Studies program. Noliwe's work explores how race and gender both impact and are impacted by popular culture, social history, and political life in the U.S. Noliwe's current research is on the subject of race and public education, an issue that we all need to be concerned about. Her expertise, however, also includes the cultural and racial implications of beauty, fashion, and adornment, and Black women's studies. Noliwe is the author of four, not just one, but four award-winning books, including her first book, Hair Raising, Beauty, Culture, and African-American Women. And I'm sure that you can see that based upon those very brief highlights, you'll understand why we're excited to have Noliwe joining us in this morning's conversation. Good morning, Noliwe, and thank you so much for being a part of today's show.
Good morning. That was such a lovely introduction and such a treat to be engaged with Black women on talk radio, on a podcast, blogcast, you know, talking about these issues. It doesn't happen to me very often.
Well, we're so very happy to have you with us this morning. We're going to start off this morning's show by having our master builder and leader, Ann McNeil, to share with us a little bit, share with the listening audience a little bit about how we came to develop a topic on this, a show rather, on this particular topic.
Thomasina, and actually, as we have walked through this book year after year after year, we've had a number of awesome guests come on. One of my favorites always is Miss Havila Malone. And when Havila was on the show, we were doing our debrief after the show. And for those of you that may have been following us for years, you may have seen Havila's beautiful queenly picture with long flowing hair. And so when we were doing our debrief, I asked Havila the question. I said, what motivated you to cut your beautiful hair off? And therein, all of us began to participate in the conversation that followed. And I want to just encourage all of our listeners to just think about this subject, the desires that we have. And one of the desires we have coming out of the book, Thinking Grow Rich, oftentimes deals with our own self-image and how we see ourselves and our self-worth, and they're tied together oftentimes. And so Havila then began to explain this journey, this new journey that she's on, and I'm not going to tell her story, so I'm going to ask you, Havila, if you would please chime in and share with us why you cut your hair. It's beautiful both ways, but I think our audience would really appreciate the backstory, which would give us a better understanding of why we decided to do this show.
It would be my absolute pleasure. And thank you so much, Anne and Thomasina, and everyone who is participating in the call today. I think this is such an important topic. And when we were having our last debrief after the show, you asked me a really important question, and that was around me and literally or nearly going bald when I cut all my hair off, and like, why? And for a long time, I had considered cutting my hair, but I was so tied to my identity around having long hair. I am also Miss Louisiana Universal 2018, and one of the things that I was always concerned with was like appearance and being out in public and what people thought and being able to wear the crown and things of that nature. But for years, I had off and on considered like cutting my hair off, but the question that would always present itself to me was, what would other people think? And too, I was like, I don't know if I have, my head is lopsided. Like, I have no idea what that would be like, because I've always had the hair on my head. And I had gone to this sacred meditation retreat as one of my top priorities in life is about growth, and I'm always trying to better myself, always trying to get to my next level of personal development. And as I went through this retreat, which really had me like look at some deep-seated behaviors, some deep-seated things that were going on internally, and coming out of that retreat, I felt this sense of freedom. I felt this sense of connectedness, and it came upon me, and this was almost like a divine inspiration. It was like, cut the hair off. Like, that's the thing that you're holding on to. It's an anchor to who you think you have to be, as opposed to being who you are and you're hiding behind it. And so I took the leap and cut all of my hair off, and I absolutely am so glad that I did, because there was a sense of freedom that came with not being tied to any anymore. And as we had that conversation, it kind of unfolded. I was like, how many people deal with this sense of identity and being tied to their hair? So I'm so excited about today's conversation and Noliwe being on the special guest for today's show, because I think so many of us struggle with trying to fit into a perception as opposed to having the courage to be able to be and build who we want to be from the beginning. So thank you so much for opening this dialogue and setting this up on this platform.
Thank you, Havila, for sharing that story. Very powerful story. And I was a part of that conversation when Havila was explaining her rationale for cutting her hair. And I can't remember whether it was Havila or Anne or maybe both of you joked that we need to do a whole show on this topic. And I said, well, you know, if we want to do that, I happen to know somebody who I think might be a great guest speaker, who is a scholar who for whom this is part of her work and has actually written a book called Hair Raising, Beauty, Culture, and African-American Women. And so I reached out to Noliwe, and Noliwe was gracious enough to accept our offer to be our guest this morning to help us unpack and think through this issue around hair and identity and culture and how that relates to the concepts that Napoleon Hill talks about in his classic book, Think and Grow Rich. And before we get into having Noliwe share with us, I just want to run down really quickly for our listening audience what the 13 steps are of Napoleon Hill's success formula. I know that we go through this every Saturday, but there may be people who haven't heard them all put together in one place. And I think it will help to set the context, as well as Havila sharing about the conversation we're going to have this morning. So, again, the formula has 13 steps to it, and as Anne mentioned, desire. Having a burning desire is the number one step that Napoleon Hill says is required for us to achieve success in any area of our lives. It might be around making more money. It might be around starting a business or taking your business to the next level. It could be around improving your family situation. It could be around anything that you choose, but you have to have a burning desire. And Napoleon Hill outlines in this first chapter of his book a six-part formula which helps you to crystallize and articulate for yourself what that burning desire is. The second step is faith. We have to have faith and belief in ourselves that we can attain whatever we have as that desire. And this part of the book is where Napoleon Hill outlines his self-confidence formula. This issue of hair is tied very much to self-confidence. Now, step number three is what Napoleon Hill calls auto-suggestion. And auto-suggestion simply speaks to what is it that we're feeding our subconscious mind. our minds take in everything in our surroundings. And interestingly enough, it takes in more readily the negative as opposed to the positive. And we have to be very conscientious and intentional about what we're feeding our thoughts, about what we look like, what other people's perceptions are of us, as well as our perceptions of ourselves. So auto-suggestion and what we feed our minds is very important. Step number 3 in the formula. Step number 4 is specialized knowledge. None of us know everything about anything, even our particular area of expertise. So we have to take our own specialized knowledge and be able to combine that with other people's specialized knowledge. And in this day and age, if there's a question you have about virtually anything, all you need to do is pull up a search engine and do an internet search, and you'll get all the knowledge you need about a particular area and be able to enroll that into whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. Step number 5 is imagination. Napoleon Hill says that our imaginations, our minds, are the workshops in which our ideas are formulated, so that we can figure out how is it that we're going to bring this burning desire that we have into reality. Step number 6 is organized planning. This one always gets me. In order to achieve anything, we may have a great idea that has come to us, but to make that idea into reality, we got to plan, and we have to be organized about that planning and be systematic about what it is that we need to do to actually bring our burning desire into reality. Step number 7 is decision. Napoleon Hill says that the way to overcome procrastination, which hits us all at some point or another, the way to overcome procrastination is to simply make a decision, to make a decision and to move and act on that decision. Then number 8 is persistence. Once we've made a decision, we got to stick with it. One of the other books in Napoleon Hill series that I love is 3 Feet from Goal, in which he talks about how most of us never achieve what it is that we say is our burning desire because we give up too easily. We have an obstacle and we want to pull back. But obstacles are simply stepping stones. We have to be persistent and hang in there in order to achieve whatever our goals might be. Step number 9, the power of the mastermind. Napoleon Hill calls this the driving force behind success. Again, because none of us have the answers to everything. There may be something, I might have the specialized knowledge, but I need some other piece of the puzzle to help me get to the next step. The power of the mastermind is also helpful because other people can see things that we cannot see, and can bring to us the power of their thought and their imagination. So surrounding ourselves with a group of other people, like-minded people, allows us to tap into their consciousness and their specialized knowledge and skills and to move forward in achieving our goals. Step number 9, the power of the mastermind. And then number 10 is the mystery of sex transmutation. Now, this is always an interesting one. I think anytime you mention the word sex in our culture, people get all discombobulated. What Napoleon Hill talks about sex as being one of the biggest energetic driving forces that we have. And he points out that those of us who are most successful have the ability to tap in not only to the physical side of sex, which is what most people think about, but also to that energetic side, to channel that energy into whatever we need to do to help us to achieve our burning desire. Step number 11, the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind, Napoleon Hill says, is the connecting link from our mind to infinite intelligence, to God mind, to that mastermind of all masterminds, if you will. And so we need to be very careful and intentional about what we're cultivating in our subconscious mind. Number 12 is the brain. Napoleon Hill characterizes our brains as broadcasting and receiving stations of our thought. This is where we kind of pull it all together and make sense of the thoughts, make sense of the information that we're getting about how to achieve our burning desire. The 13th step he calls the sixth sense, which is the door to the temple of wisdom. And that 13th step is what allows us, again, to help to kind of pull it all together to make sense of all that we have been working on in the first 12 steps in terms of figuring out how we're going to draw on what we have downloaded from infinite intelligence through our own brains into that creative imagination that crystallizes everything together. So those are the 13 steps to Napoleon Hill's 13-step success formula. And we're going to jump in now. You can understand from the introduction of No Leeway and listening to Havila's story, the conversation between her and Anne, why it was that we wanted to have No Leeway as our guest this morning to help us talk about this subject of hair, beauty, culture, and African-American women. So I want to start off by asking No Leeway, if you can share with us, what was the burning desire that you had that prompted you to write the book, Hair Raising, Beauty, Culture, and African-American Women?
Hi, thank you so much. That was so interesting to hear. So the hair raising was my dissertation. I was in graduate school, and at the end of the process, you have to write a substantial body of work that's supposed to be original research that no one's done before, and have a kind of scholarly focus. And I was kind of casting around. I couldn't figure out what I wanted to devote years to thinking about and writing and researching. And I had, at the time in graduate school, had started to lock my hair. I went to school, this was in the early 90s, and I was in Iowa, and they didn't have locticians. Now people specialize in helping you start your locks so that they're nice and groomed and cute and, yes, they look attractive. I did not know how to do this and didn't have a loctician, so I just decided I was going to stop combing my hair. And so it looked kind of crazy. Like today, I recognize this was not really an expression of self and self-affirming of Black culture. My hair just looked crazy because I didn't know what I was doing. But at the time, I was like, yes, I'm going to lock my hair. And so I was out walking around in Iowa City, and there were two older Black women sitting at a bus stop. And when I walked by, I could hear one say to the other, oh, my Lord, what has she done? In that moment, I was torn in a number of different directions. On the one hand, I understood exactly what they meant, like what they were responding to, because I was my grandmother. I'm a grandma's girl. My grandmother raised me in a way in the South where how you appeared in public, whenever you went out the door, that you were supposed to be groomed in a certain kind of way. And these two women were around my grandmother's age at the time. And because that spoke not just to you, it spoke to your family, your home training, it spoke to the larger race. Like, when Black people went out their house into integrated spaces, I have been raised to understand that there's a certain way that you did that. And I really did recognize that my hair was not representing that. But at the same time, for me, it was a moment of, really trying to embrace something about beauty and identity that didn't come from outside, that came from inside. So those two things were kind of colluding with colliding into each other, how I had been raised to think of my appearance as an aspect of a larger kind of Black identity, and again, family identity in a more personal kind of way, and with me wanting to figure out who I wanted to be separate from what I saw in magazines and on television, and how at the time most celebrities and Black women I saw in popular culture looked. And in that moment, I realized there was enough there to really figure out the answer to that question, how is it that hair means so much to Black women? I've never had a conversation about hair with women in general, Black women in particular, where there's not a hair story, where there's not something that about our hair that really marks a transformation or a movement in our consciousness in some substantive way. If it's about from girlhood to adulthood, if it's about a bad breakup and cut your hair off, if it's about really deciding that you're going to do the big chop and, you know, get rid of processed hair. Like they're for Black women, we all have a story about hair, and for most of us, a story about how we use our hair, relate to our hair, to lead to a kind of empowerment. So that's why we're here.
Wow, fascinating, fascinating. And I, again, our listening audience can understand why it is that we have invited Nolewe Rooks to share with us this morning about this issue around hair. And I love what you said. Your initial impetus was because you wanted to do something around beauty from the inside, which is a message that resonates very strongly, I know, with Havila, who's going to go to our next question after we do our commercial break. So we're going to go to a commercial break now, and on the other side, we're going to go to Havila for our next question.
You are listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to today's edition of the International Mastermind Association's Think and Grow Rich Blog Talk Radio Show. This morning we have as our very special guest Professor Nolewe Rooks, who is a tenured professor at Cornell University, where part of her work is around beauty, fashion, adornment, and Black women's studies. And Havila, you shared with us at the beginning your story around what prompted you to cut your hair. Would you like to lead off with the next question around this issue of beauty being from the inside and our self-perception being tied into how we look and our hair?
Absolutely. I would love to. And speaking of self-perception, Dr. Rooks, you talk about in your book that from an early age, I think it was somewhere around like 13, that you were able to realize how significant hair was. And that came through your own experience of like wanting to straighten your hair, but yet having a very different reaction from your mother and even as opposed to your grandmother. And so I'd love for you to be able to talk a little bit about that experience and what that did for you.
Yeah, thank you. In order to understand this, my parents got divorced when I was 5, and their custody arrangement, I split time between the San Francisco Bay Area with my mother and then the Tampa Bay Area in Clearwater, Florida, with my grandmother and my father. So I was going back and forth regularly. So about the time I was 13, and my hair had been natural for the most part up until 13, and it hadn't really been a question. But at the time I'm 13, like y'all know how cliques are. I think most listeners know those middle school cliques or, you know, wanting to be a part of groups of people you admire is something that carries through our entire life. But when you are like 12, 13, adolescent, and you are in middle school, you really want to fit in. So all of my friends, all the folks I wanted to fit in with, all the people I wanted to look like had straight hair. But at the time in San Francisco, it's the height of a kind of activist Black consciousness movement, Black power movement. And my mother was very much a part of this activist community that was looking to Africa and the world for Black identities that were separate from the kinds of oppressive ways that
or unattractive ways that black people could be represented. And so a lot of people had African names, you wore afros, were, you know, ubiquitous. So, you know, unlike a lot of folks at that age, I actually had to lobby my mother to ask to straighten my hair because I wanted to look like my friends. It really wasn't even that deep. I just wanted to look like my friends. But, you know, she became alarmed about, well, you know, well, what is this saying about your sense of self? Like, why do you want to look like, why do you want to change your hair? What's wrong with your hair? Your hair is beautiful. You are beautiful. You know, it's the black is beautiful, period. And I'm trying to explain, I just want to look like my friends, you know, and I just want to fit in. And I'm like showing pictures of Essence magazine, kind of going, look at the black woman's magazine. All the women have straight hair. At the time, they pretty much did in the ads, et cetera. So anyway, she really wasn't having it. So it was a good argument. I did a good job mounting an argument, but she saw a larger significance in me not sort of giving in to these larger representations of black women with straight hair. But as I said, I split years. So when I got to Florida, my grandmother was immediately like, oh, yes, this is great. Let us straighten your hair. Like, when I told her I wanted to straighten my hair, she had always been kind of like, what do I do with this hair that's not straight as I got older? You know, as a little girl, you're doing little afro puffs and little things with barrettes, but as you're getting older, you're not really walking around with your hair like that. Afros in Clearwater, Florida at the time were just not really a thing. And so she never knew. Go ahead.
No, please continue.
Oh, so she, you know, was of the hallelujah response to the I want to straighten my hair, and took me to Miss Ruby's beauty parlor almost immediately. And I never got a perm. It was always with a straightening comb. But the story I tell in the book is how that was also a transformative space, because the thing about having always worn my hair natural up to that point was I had never had a beauty parlor experience. Like, I'd never and then to be an adolescent, you know, a teenager, and to get to sit around with grown women just hearing them talk about everything and everybody getting my hair, you know, styled and feeling like you're listening in to illicit conversations. And and then for the first few days, you know, because Florida heat and humidity is not really given to pressed hair. However, for the first few days, you know, my hair was all like bouncy and tight, but it felt different than anything it ever felt like before. And, you know, I thought that was great. But again, Florida heat and humidity, that lasted maybe 48 hours, you know, and then it was back to itself. But the thing that experience at 13 taught me, even though I didn't know this is what it was teaching me, is that hair stories and hair narratives and, you know, beauty and what it means, you know, has generational significance. It has political significance. And it also, though, has the power, and this is part of what I ended up writing about with beauty parlors. Hair was like one of the first entrepreneurial ventures that black women could have that was not about them being a domestic, an agricultural worker, but them setting up their own businesses and creating spaces that really fostered that kind of intimacy amongst black women, where you could come and share what had been going wrong with you, what had been going right with you, or whoever you wanted to gossip about. And it was a form of self-care as well, where in those beauty parlors, which I hadn't had before, you know, to have someone else kind of wash your hair, do a little scalp massage, it felt like a kind of pampering for a group of women. You know, black women, we don't always do that. So I think that moment at 13, even though I didn't know it at the time, really gave me a lot of sense of the dimensions of what hair is and how it can relate to identity.
Yeah, and you speak a lot about, you know, Madam C.J. Walker and her work to be able to help people to not only grow their hair but also make money with the hair in the hair business, and creating that entrepreneurial endeavor. But you mm-hmm. said something that I thought was really significant, which was around the piece of trying to fit in, the piece of, as a 13-year-old, looking at these cliques and seeing these young ladies and saying, hey, I want to look like and be like that. And I think a lot of the things that we see in media that we see around us affect our decisions. And we know that's a big piece in Napoleon Hill's philosophy on success is the decisions that we make. And this has been going on for forever. And matter of fact, in the book you speak about incident in the 1850s where this African American young lady, Charlotte Grimsky, wrote this entry in her journal. And so I want you to talk a little bit about the entry that she made, which I think so ties to this conversation about our identity and self-perception.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, let me just give a little shout out to people who want to do family histories and, you know, to go dig us up from the past. So Charlotte Fortin Grimsky is a upper-class Black woman. Highly educated, came from generations of educated Black people, which in the 1850s, you know, is not the majority. But she, because she was educated, though, she left journals, she left diaries, and I mentioned that to say, you know, the inner world realities, those little moments, like what it means to sit in a beauty parlor, like what it means when you decide that you want to cut your hair, or you know, just those personal moments, we don't always get that with Black women, and we don't always leave those behind. So anyway, that's just the nerding out scholar in me for a minute about how important it is to tell these stories and make them public so folks can come behind and understand who we are from our own words. But Charlotte Fortin Grimsky is someone who is talked about as this poised, beautiful, elegant, impactful woman by all of these sort of really famous white people and Black people. Like, she's making an impact everywhere she goes. But in her journal, she writes about how she wishes, you know, she just can't believe how unimpressive she looks and how awkward she feels and how not beautiful she feels. And she starts talking about another woman who has blonde hair and blue eyes, who she's like, she's just so lovely. But the fact of her loveliness, is she's writing in her journal, has everything to do with her hair and her eyes. And that speaks to her, to poise. But more importantly, she starts talking in her journal about how, and I could never be that. I wish I could be that. And so I use that, and I think it's something probably we all deal with, the difference between how those inner demons have us feel about ourselves, about how we look, and the ways that we can covet the ways that other people look. And it didn't matter, again, that she was free, wealthy, well-educated, and impactful. It didn't matter that's what other people saw. She saw something very different and didn't think that she would ever measure up to those standards of beauty that were in her own mind.
Such something I think we can all relate to is the standards of beauty and really being able to make decisions for ourselves and have a desire to be able to be true to who we are, but that is affected by the things that we see around us. And Thomasine, I know that you had some additional questions for No Leeway, but I thank you so much for having the insight, for having the courage to be able to take this journey to write this material, because it's definitely a part, something that affects all of us, because it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's political, it is, you know, spiritual, it is tied to the fabric of our identities.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just listening to you, Naliwe, there's so many different directions we could take this conversation. The political significance part, I've always worn my hair natural, and I've had people think that I was trying to make some political statement from way back. Mm-hmm. I just can't sit in a beauty salon for hours on Saturday mornings. That, you know, so it wasn't necessarily political. I love the entrepreneurial aspect of it, too, because we often don't think about that hair as being a way for Black women to empower themselves economically. But I don't want to hog the mic. I am going to turn it over to Angelique, who also has a burning comment and question for you. Angelique?
Thank you. Thank you, Thomasina. Oh, this has been such of a kind of admiration call. It's everything. It's like I'm on the edge of my seat as I listen to you ladies speak. Such phenomenal women could be anywhere else on Saturday, but we're on the phone call having this much-needed conversation. And I want to go back to a story that you were telling regarding your grandmother when you were going to Florida. You know, being raised in the South, me personally, I was raised in Georgia. I came to Tampa in my later years, kind of like my early teen years. And, you know, I wanted to bring up a conversation that I never even, it never dawned on me until you told the story about your grandmother and your hair. I remember when I came to Tampa, you know, I have, the texture of my hair is like wavy. So we all of, in our family, we have like long, wavy, thick hair. So when I came to Tampa, you know, I would begin to get these questions like, oh, what are you mixed with? Oh, you're not all the way Black. And I had never heard that before. And I'm looking at them like, no, where I'm from, we're all the same color. Like, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm a shade of that color. I'm considered African-American, you know. And this kind of takes a shift because this is the first time while it was brought towards my attention that there was diversity in the Black community. You know, it's like, and it's a much needed to have conversation because even when we were going to school, I remember them saying like the longest hair in school, and they're like, you can't do that because you're not all Black. I'm thinking to myself, actually I am. But it's like, when did we get to a point that we're justifying who we are through our hair?
Hair texture is everything. Because, you know, Black people are all over the world, right? So in Latin America, there's some countries where your racial classification follows your hair's natural state. So you could be dark skin, but if your hair was like long, straight, kind of more textured toward what we think of as white people's hair, that would make you a white person. And in Black culture, I mean, we used to, it's not so much anymore, there used to be this term good and bad hair. And at the time, everybody knew what that meant when you were talking about good hair. I often tell people with natural hairstyles, you have good hair, just to sort of reinforce that good hair comes in all kinds of ways. But at the time, it really spoke a more kind of what we would think of as white hair, or the closer the texture was to being naturally straight as it grew out of your head, the more likely we were to refer to that as good hair. And then bad hair, the more tightly coiled your hair was, that people were referring to them as like naps. That was bad hair. And this was like ubiquitous. Everybody knew what you were talking about when you said good and bad hair. It's almost as important as skin color. And growing up in the South, my grandmother had, sounds like the same kind of hair that you have, is kind of wavy. And my hair texture followed some of that. And so people, and I only mention that to say, people would often say to me, you have a good grade of hair to be so dark. You know, the idea of good hair, what that meant, how that was situating you, and that was only in Black communities. It was not, like, white people didn't really know the difference between good and bad. Like, they didn't get the fine nuances. That was one of the ways that we trained our families, the ways that inside families we made beauty standards and started to shape the identity of young girls, of what was acceptable, what was beautiful. And that didn't come from outside. That came from inside. Often when my students, who come from everywhere in the world, my Black students come from everywhere in the world, when we start talking about beauty and politics and where you learn it, there's this idea that the white culture is busy out there making you look bad or make you feel bad about yourself, and that media that's controlled by people who are not black. But the stories my students tell and the stories that I have, those beauty standards, how we feel about ourselves, what counts as acceptable to us, really those first stories come from those people who are closest to us. They don't come from outside. Those stories that are good and bad, the stories that people tell you everything about you is gorgeous and wonderful, that shapes our identity in the same ways that people start saying, you know, you're getting older now, we need to straighten your hair. I mean, my experience was I had to fight to straighten my hair. That's really not the experience of a lot of little black girls. They're very young when their hair starts being straightened. And so for a lot of people growing up, hair in their natural state doesn't feel like an option to them because they've never had it. Not even that it's political, but they've just been young girls since they had hair that was in its natural state. So all of those kinds of messages, I mean, it's interesting, I think, to think about where they come from and to not just think of them as coming from outside of our communities and families.
Yeah, and, you know, even the conversation, and I just want to share this with you because the topic is hair. You know, I remember having a conversation with someone, we were just having an open conversation, and I remember her telling me, like, no, the difference between you and I is that you would have been in the house and I would have been in the fields. And I'm like, what, were either of us happy? Like, you know, like, so you get what I'm saying? Like, you're out picking, and I'm like, God knows what I'm doing in the house at this time. But I think it brings up a conversation that needs to be had. Like, don't defy me as my hair. You know, why won't you defy me? Not from that, like, when did we take a curve to where you're more black if your hair is more nappy? Who said that black people were founded over nappy hair? And I just want to say that, for the record, I love being who I am. I don't think it's a coincidence of who I am being a black woman, because in the public eye, we get so shamed and we don't get a lot of credibility for the things that we go through and the things that we are put through, and some of the issues that we face that there are so many other bigger things to do and focus, and we're so much more than our hair. So I'm hoping with this call, with this show, that we can kind of at least plant the seed or open the minds to people to say, you know, we're more than our hair. That doesn't make us any more black or me any less black because I just happen to have inherited this texture of hair. You know, unfortunately, I didn't have the luxury of choosing. So we're all, and I thank God, you know, all of us have a different fingerprint. No one has the same one. So that lets us know that we're all unique in our own way. And I just think, I just admire you so much for actually writing a book, because I went through this as being a red-skinned child and coming from the South and coming to Florida, and I thought it was going to get better. I thought when I came here, I would have a different perception, or I'd be viewed differently. But it's like, no, I never even got exposed to this. I would have thought that I would have got exposed to that living in the South, considering what was going on at the time. But it's like, no, and I think people need to be more open-minded as far as how you perceive people just by their hair. Like, how narrow-minded is that? To see an individual and make a judgment by their hair. And I wanted to ask you about an incident that just recently happened, which I'm pretty sure we're all familiar with. Despite the underlining of the story, there was a wrestler that was recently involved in taking place in a wrestling match. And during that time, they proceeded to tell him that his dreads had to be cut off at that time. And this was something that, oh, my gosh, watching this video just kind of made me kind of crack a little bit on the inside. And I know that there are other stipulations regarding this story, but just the look that it – just I don't know what I was more offended about as far as them doing it publicly and advertising that they can actually do this. No matter how old the child is, even if I think the child was 16 or 17 at the time, And I just want to hear your outlet on that as far as them being able to cut their hair on live TV for a wrestling match because they said that it didn't. You don't qualify to have dreads to attend this match. What do you think about that?
That was heart-wrenching for a lot of people who saw it. It went on social media. It started going around, and, you know, I felt like a lot of folks were commenting on, like, is no one seeing the look on this child's face? It was like, you know, you wanted to hug him. Yes, he told them they could cut his hair so that he could go on and wrestle, but he looked wrecked. He looked like he was grieving something. They just chopped it off any kind of way, but it looked like a violation. And I wrote once about all of the little black kids that I've heard about crying and seen crying when they're in public space and some white authority figures decides that their hair is not appropriate. So like all over the country for some time now since the 90s. There are all these stories of black kids who are in school or here for him. You know, he's on school grounds who are told your hair looks like it's disruptive or it's just wrong or it's not attractive. And you have people saying you either have to leave the school and come back with your hair in a different style. And it's usually dreadlocks. Dreadlocks are braids. That offend someone in authority. And the thing is, it's as you were talking about your personal experience and people's perceptions of hair, black people's perceptions of hair in Florida, it's not always white people who are telling these kids your hair is inappropriate and you need to stop that and come back. It can also be black people who say that is not, you know, a style we're going to allow here. And so often, you know, when we think about identity, something as personal as hair, so often I was struck by how some people mention in these stories as they're reporting them how the kids cry, you know, like how these little kids are crying. There's been kids kicked out of preschool because, you know, somebody didn't like their dreadlocks, you know, and how they felt about themselves and how they're just confused about how something that they might delight in, that they have, you know, a part of their body. I mean, hair is so personal. It grows out of your body. That they have this relationship with, that someone else can decide this is what we are going to change. And forcefully, violently, like how black hairstyles can evoke such strong feelings is still fascinating to me. It's still fascinating how often we see and hear instances of there's something wrong with that hairstyle. You're trying to make a statement with that hairstyle. That hairstyle is disruptive. And he just, you know, this young man, is he 16 years old? He just trying to be him, a productive citizen in his school, and to have it, like you said, publicly cut like that, and to have so many people in that moment tell him you're so brave, you know, and thank you, you're a team player, and that none of the folks who were saying that, it was saying that's great, you're a team player because you're letting them cut your hair in public so you can go ahead and wrestle and make the school look good. But that none of them and none of the adults, and no adults even said, can we do this in private? Or, you know, perhaps there's another way, or, you know, nothing. Like he was just by himself having to make this decision and having this body part altered in that way.
Yeah.
It was just heart-wrenching. To me, it was just heart-wrenching to look at his face. He was devastated.
Yeah, and it was like public shame almost. It's like, you're just going to cut it right here. We're not going to go take a time out. We're just going to do this and grab some scissors and just cut it. And yeah. Oh, man. As much as I would love to keep you for the show, Thomasina and Ms. Ann, no, we will be here until 1 o'clock. If I could have you for the entire show. But I did want to get a few questions in. I admire what you're doing. I hope that we keep the conversation going. And I know Thomasita said that the book was written almost 20 years ago. So that just shows you how relevant it still is in today's society. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thomasina, I'm going to let you take back over. Thank you, ladies.
thank you, Angelique, for raising that point about the young man who had his dreads just whacked off like that. That was heart-wrenching for a lot of people. And as Noliwe says, you know, periodically we hear about these stories in the media of young children being shamed around their hair. But we only hear, I think, a fraction of probably what's actually going on, which ties into another one of Noliwe's areas of expertise around race and public education. We don't have time to get into all of that today. but what I want to do is go quickly to our next commercial break. We have several callers who've been holding on the line. We want to thank you for being patient. We're going to go to a commercial break and come back and continue our conversation with Professor Noliwe Rook.
At Sell to Success.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version, restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-30-2002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-30-2002.
Good morning, and you are listening to today's edition of the International Mastermind Association's Think and Grow Rich Blog Talk Radio Show. This morning's topic is a very interesting conversation we're having around hair. I am not my hair, where identity, decisions, and think and grow rich meet. Our special guest this morning is Professor Noliwe Rook, who is the director of Africana Studies at Cornell University, where she also teaches in the Feminist Gender and Sexuality Studies program. Noliwe is the author of a book called Hair Raising, Beauty, Culture and Identity, and the African American Woman. We have a number of callers who've been waiting patiently on the line. The first caller who I am going to go to, your telephone number ends in 4644. Your telephone number ends in 4644.
Yeah.
Good morning. Your comment or your question?
You guys covered so much. I'm going to try to respond to some of those. You know, you was talking about the wrestling, amateur wrestling. They usually don't have the long hair because when you get somebody in a headlock, the person that has you in the headlock has your hair and you can slip your head out. I've seen those decisions before in high schools on basketball teams. And actually, the people in that community that's associated with their sport should have had those rules and regulation all set out before they got to that point. And, you know, you talk about hair. White's hair actually is fur because the follicles are round. A person who stay close to the equator where you don't have much body hair, it's too hot to have hair, you see that the follicles in their hair is flat. That's why it curls the way it does and gets, I guess you can say, nappy. One other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that, you know, you talk about hair. Look at the things that those African-American gymnasts went through, like Gabrielle Douglas and the astounding things that she did in the sport. But when you looked at read social media, most of the comments was on her hair rather than what she had achieved. And beauty is usually associated with the culture because you can go in some areas of the country or the world, that is, and people would have a saucer in their ear or some other object in their lips. And in that culture, that is beauty. But for those on the outside, it's something different. And I want to recommend a book for you. I see where you're commenting on Napoleon Bonaparte. Are you familiar with A.G. Gaston? Any of you? A.G. Gaston was an African-American multimillionaire who was born in the late 1800s, came up in Birmingham, Alabama. And during the riots and the incidents that surrounded the bus boycott, A.G. Gasson took over $300,000 of his own personal money to bail people out of jail during that time. And he wrote a book called Green Power. And I think it would be well worth that you have opportunity to read it and have it as one of your suggestions for those who's trying to understand and get into the minds of people who have done very successful in the United States. When he died, he gave away over half of his wealth, which is over probably $130 million, to his employees. And his wife, Minnie Gasson, when he created the Booker T. Washington Secretariat School because he needed secretaries for his businesses, she petitioned Congress. She testified in front of Congress on the need for, you know, students to be able to go to school, which thus led into what we call today student loans. So just a little information.
Thank you for sharing. The next caller who we're going to open up your line, phone number ends in 4712. 4712. Your phone line is open. Your comment or question.
Hi, this is Rose. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this talk about hair because I think it's a very, very important talk that we, especially Black women, should have. My story is a comment, but mine is real quick, was that my hair was thinning, and so I decided to, I either could go through a wig or going natural. And that when I decided, the back and forth was for a while. And then what really came out of my spirit really ministered to me. What came out was, you know, will I be accepted? And when that thing came, when that came out of me, I was like, will I be accepted? That's when I started really realizing the subliminal messages that we get on what beauty is. And so I decided to go natural, and I cut my hair short, real short. And it's so interesting how some comments that I get regarding, you know, going short from, man, that's a bold move, to sometimes because my hair is short and I had to realize it in the time, in the season of, you know, alternative lifestyles, people may think, you know, and so I was, you know, so I carry myself in a certain way. It's so interesting because of me going natural how I have to, but I'm conscious of making it more of a learning discussion when people say, why did you cut your hair short? Or, you know, that's a bold move. Or aren't you afraid what people think? The kind or a political stance. I heard somebody said that earlier, like you're making a political stance against the man. And I'm thinking like, wow, this is all about hair? But it was really for me when I decided to go natural was a spiritual journey on really accepting myself on who I am. And I am enjoying that. And I think it was Ms. Thomasina that said this too. I don't have time on a Saturday to wait like 6 hours at a hair salon. I go to an actual barber. Man, I'm like in and out. But I, and so for me also, it's like for I, you know, minister to young girls in the juvenile detention centers, which a lot of them are Black, beautiful girls. And I so make it a point to tell them how beautiful they are. They ask me about my hair. They like my hair. And they said, you got that kind of hair that you can do that. I always make it like a learning experience to teach them that they can love themselves. Or, and another thing that I do, I make it a conscious point to not say words that have connotation to it, like, you know, nappy hair or good and bad hair. You know, I always say, what do you think bad hair is? And they look at me because they're going to say what they really want is beautiful hair or nice hair is long hair. You know, but now when I ask them in that way, me having short hair, they really think about why is it that, you know, long hair is considered beautiful or short, kinky hair or whatever hair texture you have is less of a woman. And that's what I realized just going through that journey. I love my short hair. I said I wanted to try something different, maybe a wig, but I haven't got there, just something different. But it is, for me, really has become a journey of accepting myself. So I wanted to just say I really enjoyed this talk. I think it's something that definitely needs to be discussed in a very candid way on, you know, accepting ourselves, how we are made, not so much, you know, accepting what society says is beautiful. So thank you so very much.
Thank you for sharing. Again, this gets back to, I think, tying us back to Napoleon Hill, talking about the power of our subconscious mind and auto-suggestion, the things that we feed ourselves, the things that we allow into our subconscious minds by virtue of the messages that society wants to send us about what is and isn't beautiful, who is and isn't attractive, and our own self-confidence being so much tied to hair. I'm going to go to another caller now. We still have a number of people waiting on the line. Our next caller, phone number ends in 7988. Good morning. Your comment or your question?
Good morning, Thomasina.
Good morning.
And thank y'all so much for doing this. And the first thing I want to say is when I heard the title, I Am Not My Hair, it made me think about 7 years ago this time when I was laying in the hospital the night before my brain surgery. And all night I listened to India Irie's I Am Not My Hair, trying to convince myself that when the doctor shaves my head and shaves off my locks, I was going to be okay with it. But I had to tell that doctor right before surgery, I wasn't okay with that. And please don't cut my hair. Please don't cut my hair. And even though it was about vanity, I had seen people who had brain surgery, women, and I had seen the staples in their heads, and I just did not want to wake up to see staples in my head and half my hair gone after I had worked so hard on my locks. So when I saw the title, I was like, oh, yeah, I got to listen to this one, because I guess it is somewhat about how you see yourself in that situation. But Dr. Rooks said something mm-hmm. earlier, and I think it really is important. The first time I decided to wear braids in my hair in the 90s, being a trial attorney, I didn't even think about it because I'm who I am. I know I'm a lawyer, and my hair shouldn't have anything to do with it. But it was a black judge who came to me and said, you really want to do that? I think you made a mistake doing that, because jurors aren't going to listen to you, and you're not going to be able to persuade them on behalf of your clients because of who I am as a person or as an attorney. So I agree. Usually the pushback we get is from us, not from the other people. They just want to touch your hair and see what it feels like. But the one thing I do want to say as relates to auto-suggestion, and I find that we do it a lot, I'm really big on the words we choose to use, especially when we're dealing with other peoples of different hues. So when someone says something to me about my hair and or to be apprehensive, I always just refer to them as locks. Mm-hmm. And I think that puts a different spin on it to people, because I think people do get scared of people they see with their hair locks, especially our black men. They're already apprehensive about them just because of the way their hair looks. So I take that word out when I'm using to describe how I wear my hair. I wear locks. Sometimes they're up. Sometimes they're down. Sometimes they're curly. Sometimes they're straight. But they're just locks. So that was my comment. Thank you for having the conversation. A lot of who we are into our hair as women. You know, that's why we have so many weaves out here, because people feel they have to have that long, straight hair to be accepted in society. And that was my comment.
Thank you, Lynn, for calling in, and thank you for sharing. We have a number of calls, callers still holding. Next, I want to go to my co-host, Ms. Robin Donaldson. Robin has a comment or a question for you, Newlyway.
Good morning. Good morning. And thank
good morning.
You again.
Good morning.
This is such a timely topic. I remember as a child, my mom, on her dresser, she had every color wig, every color texture, because her hair had to match her clothes on a Sunday. And, you know, that was her identity. And for me as a stylist, I have been doing hair for like over 20-some years. And I would be tasked, I mean, ladies would sit in my chair asking me, I want to be made beautiful. I want to look younger. It's really amazing how our hair plays such an important part on who we perceive ourselves to be. And mm-hmm. I also know, like, a couple of years ago, I had to cut all of my hair off because of a medical treatment. And I was vexed. I'm like, I was the hair weave queen. And for me, hair was my comfort. It was my confidence. And it was my uniform. But it mm-hmm. was then and only then that I realized that, again, I am not my hair. Because people, they commented, but they didn't treat me any different. I mean, I was still who I was. And I just wanted to lend that comment. And, again, thank you so much for being a host on the show because, again, this is such a timely topic. And so, again, thank you.
Thank you.
This is indeed a hot topic. We have several other people holding on the line. So, Naliwe, I'm going to see if we can get a couple of other folks in here. The next person
sure.
whose line we're going to open up ends in 6688. 6688, your comment or your question for our guest, Professor Naliwe Brooks.
Good morning. This is Laverne. I am very excited to even hear a part of the show. I called in late, but I think I got a good gist of it. I remember just when I heard the title of the show, I Am Not My Hair, I'm like, well, I'm not, you know. I think for years we've just made hair a huge part of our identity. It doesn't matter where you grow up. I don't care what color you are. You kind of just, hair has been a big thing. Your hair is even more important than how you get dressed in the morning. I mean, growing up, I watched, you know, my grandma, I'm sure some people watch their mothers collecting and caring for wigs. You know, there's a big deal over getting your hair combed, whether it's being braided or, you know, doing something over the weekend so you're set for the week ahead. It's a big thing. And for us to really change anything about how we feel about hair, it truly has to come from inside because we have been so conditioned to believe that hair is a big deal. And, you know, I've been going natural myself, but I remember days when I am not, you know, my hair isn't laid down. And people, my folks, my family, my friends, people like me and people who are not like me would come up and say, hi, what's going on with your hair today? So they've made it a big deal, and so I've made it a big deal. And then when I finally get a hairdo, whether it's a retouch or a pressing comb, I get the good compliment of, approval. Ooh, that looks good today. You look good, girl. So I think this is a great conversation. I think we just need to be really use the order suggestion from the book, Think and Grow Rich, because that will allow us to work on ourselves individually and then work on our community. So I applaud you for this show. It's a wonderful topic and very timely. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening in. Thank you for your comment. What we're going to do right now, I believe, is to take another quick commercial break. We do have one additional caller who is holding on the line who had a comment or a question. After we hear from our
next commercial, then we're going to go come back to that person.
For more information about the International, you're listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the International Masterminders Association's Blog Talk Radio Show. We're having a special conversation about I Am Not My Hair. And today's guest that is joining us is Naliwe Rooks, who is the author of Hair Raising, Beauty, Culture, and African American Women. And we do have an additional caller who's on the line. But before we bring the caller back on, it's actually an excerpt from the book that goes very deep as we have this conversation about identity and tying this to those Think and Grow Rich principles. But in the book, Dr. Rooks, you said in novels, you know, and you mentioned novels such as The Color Purple and The Bluest Eye, you said in novels, hair is the site where African-American women comb their memories and braid or straighten their experiences to express the dreams and possibilities of a social reality where they are equal partners in the creation and styling of a world free of oppression. And as we are talking about identity and really tying back to making those decisions about who we are and being able to go after our own burning desires and how we are under a lot of influences from the things that we see from other people and how powerful auto-suggestion is and how we even perceive ourselves. I think this is such a timely conversation and a timely topic to be able to have. And our fearless leader, Ms. Ann McNeil, if you can bring on the next caller to be able to ask their question on the line.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Fine. My name is Belvy Rooks, and this has just been a fascinating and amazing conversation. And I was interested, Naliwe, in just remembering the conversations about hair. And I just wanted to say that in addition to it being the era of Black consciousness, you know, trying to raise a child in an era where Dr. Clark, you know, the African-American psychologist, was doing all these studies of African-American children who always selected the white doll, because they were beautiful. And I think that, you know, the challenge was how do you raise healthy children in that context? And, you know, so I'm really happy because it's, you know, been a lot of years, and I think parents are much more affirmed and supported in their desire to have their children be confident based on how they look and who they are, as opposed to how they're defined. And so a big thing for young parents of my generation were those studies where African-American children always felt a lack of confidence and a lack of beauty because of how they looked and because of their hair. So we probably went a little overboard.
And this is Thomasina. I just want to apologize. My phone line keeps going in and out, so I apologize for that little glitch. But what our caller did not say, she told you her name is Belvy Rooks. She did not share that she is the mother of Naliwe Rooks and the one who Naliwe was trying to convince to allow her to straighten her hair.
It's true. So, it's always interesting for me hearing the origin of Noliwe's scholarly work based on the fact that when I sent her to Florida from San Francisco, she had an afro. And then when she got off the plane in Florida, the first thing her grandmother did was took her to the beauty parlor and had her hair straightened and had ribbons. And then at the end of the summer, she sent her back to California, and the first thing I did was take her home and wash her hair. So to see what the impact of this in terms of scholarship was is interesting always to hear. But this conversation is brilliantly contextualized as it relates to self-confidence and identity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Noliwe, did you want to speak to that issue around the struggle that parents have? And one of the questions I wanted to ask you in today's context, given that having natural hair is much more acceptable these days and more trendy, how do you see that impacting this question around our cultural identity connected to our hair and parents being supported to allow their children to have natural hair?
Yeah, I think it's here's the thing. Again, I teach students from the diaspora. It is far more common at this point for students from the U.S. to have natural hair stories growing up, like to not necessarily grow up with this sense that for in large swaths of the country you need to straighten your hair. But from the continent, on the African continent, it is still a struggle for them, of these young people who come from the continent, from the Caribbean. I still have stories about, oh, no, you know, that is not, that is, natural hair is still not a style that is embraced, you know, so you're straightening it. Or if your hair is natural, you're putting a wig over on top of it. Like, it's still not the idea that you're going out in public and that a desirable hairstyle can be natural hair. That's very different here in the U.S. depending on where you are. So, if you're in part of the – there's still places that you can go in the U.S. where people are kind of looking at you. But I've been on the East Coast of the United States for a while. And for a long time, you know, people would say to me, but in Brooklyn, everybody has natural hair. What are you talking about? Or, you know, even when I went to Spelman as an undergrad, and even there was a lot of natural hair in Atlanta on Spelman's campus, not necessarily in the AU Center, not necessarily in the greater Atlanta area. So there are generational shifts around hair and natural hair. There's geographic, like it depends on where you're talking about. I don't think today that there's as singular an experience around hair and what we consider acceptable or even empowering. Younger people today just don't put as much stock in the idea that my hair is the story of my life, and it's really much more about what I hear. They're much more interested in just sort of identity and style and having options. You know, I hear that often. You know, they are as likely to have cornrows or afro puffs as they are to put in a weave. And from their perspective, it's just all the same thing. So I do think that time and circumstance have made a difference to some of those historical narratives.
And it's so important, you know, that this whole topic, especially about how the interaction with parents and children are and what's being passed down generationally, because there is so much of that auto-suggestion and we become a lot of times products of what we see, which I think really ties back into the International Masterminders Association's work that they do with sharing the principles from Think and Grow Rich. They're really helping us to be able to, you know, take control of our own thought process, take control of our own mind so that we can create, use our imaginations to be able to create the image of ourselves that we want to see, and not necessarily be so swayed by society and be so swayed by outside, you know, influences and forces, and say, hey, if that's a practice that is helping me, that I identify with, that I want to move forward with, then great. If I want my hair to look like this, then great. And really being able to own, you know, our own way of thinking. And as parents, and as we're generationally moving down, we're stepping more into that place of wanting each and every person to be themselves and to have that self-acceptance, and which means we have to accept others as well as accept ourselves. So I think this is such a timely conversation to be able to have around something that is so significant within our culture and the world scene. So thank you so much, Dr. Rooks, for that.
Thank you. You know, one thing, a few years ago, it was really amazing to watch the explosion of websites and YouTube channels where you had black women talking about hair. It was almost back to the early 20th century when Madam C.J. Walker and Madam Annie Malone, and how much do I love that the first group of hairdressers, you know, put Madam in front of their name. As a way of having them, like, respect them, right? Like, you know, that you are Madam C.J. Walker. And so as they, you know, they really did start to revolutionize this whole idea of going door-to-door. You know, you buy products from the company. You go door-to-door. You work on your salesmanship. Again, this is a period of time when the options for black women are severely limited. So the idea that you could be entrepreneurial, that you could send your kids to school, that you could get out of white folks' kitchens or out of somebody's field by marketing products and providing services for other black people was really revolutionary, like that black women were doing this and at the forefront of it, and that it, for a number of folks, it made them millionaires, but more importantly, the hairdressers that signed on to these different system were able to support themselves, often with little shops in their basement or in a garage or, you know, in their homes. It might not have been like, you know, your have a shop outside the home. You could have something inside the home, but it was deeply important. And some years ago, about 10 years ago, I started to notice the same thing on YouTube channels where you had lots of women who were creating their own hair products, who were telling black women different ways they could style their hair, who were taking on advertisements and, you know, product placements and stuff, and were really making a business for themselves out of kind of styling hair. And you started to see hair communities form. So there were certain websites or channels where the same people would be coming back and really sharing stories and talking about this. So even in the 21st century, there's still, you know, hair can still provide, you know, economic support, can allow women to realize a dream, to become inventors of a whole product line and have a way of distributing them. And that moment also really showed me how black women can be at the forefront or jump into these technological advances, like having YouTube. The support, like how that really rose up, that you could have a YouTube channel and that could be income generating. And you had all these black women using hair as the particular vehicle to jump in there and create opportunities for themselves.
That really speaks to the power of the imagination. Like, if you can conceive it and believe it, you can achieve it. And they use something that was already a part of the culture and say, you know what? We're going to be able to expand, because I know in the book you talk about Madam C.J. Walker really emphasized 3 points around it, and that was economic self-sufficiency, divine inspiration, and then health and beauty and health and beauty concerns, and really being able to take that triad and build something amazing.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things you said, spiritual stuff, one of the Madam C.J. Walker stories that I love is, She says that the So, I mean, one thing, people always often talk about her as having invented the straightening comb, which she did not. She didn't invent it. But the main part of her business really was the oil that she created that helped with thinning hair, baldness, dandruff, like, you know, kind of medical concerns. Like, that's the heart of her business. And she says that one night she was asleep and God came to her in a dream, and God was a black man, and told her this secret formula for this hair care product. And so that's where it came from. When people would say, well, where did this product come from that, you know, does all these things, that is reversing balding and, you know, scalp conditions are going away and no one else is doing this, where did it come from? She's like, yes, I dreamed it and God told me. And God was a black man, by the way. So that was her creation story for where the thing even came from, which I just thought about because you mentioned the whole spiritual part.
This issue around hair does have many dimensions to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We have one last call we're going to take. We a little bit over the time that I promised Naliwe we would take. Do you have another few minutes, Naliwe, for one more question before we close us out? Great. So we're going to go to the caller whose number ends in 2447. 2447. Your phone line is open.
Hi, my name is Chris McCarron. I just want to thank Naliwe so much for opening my eyes and for a beautiful show, as always, to get me thinking on Saturday morning. And I just want to say, in kinship, I'm a white girl. I have straight, silky hair, and I have hated it as long as I can remember. I've had perms and tried to make it do something else, but I think society does that to us, right? If I loved my hair, I wouldn't be spending lots of money on hair products. I wouldn't be, you know, going to the salon and trying to change the color and the shape and the texture and the style and everything else. And we have to protect ourselves and, you know, our young kids from that sort of you're not good enough message that we get from society. So.
Thank you, Chris, for your comment. We appreciate that. As I said, we have gone a little bit over our original time that we had told Naliwe we would take from her on this Saturday morning. But Naliwe, thank you so much for being with us this morning. This has been a great conversation. Do you have any closing comments or words to share with our listeners?
Let's see. I think it's easier said than done, but it's been said so many times. I think one of the battles for women in general really is to affirm our own views and ideas about who we are and what we want, and to be okay with how we move through the world when we adorn ourselves, style ourselves, and to see those style choices as ways to love ourselves. Again, it's not always easy, but I think it's a battle worth waging. That's it.
Absolutely. Absolutely a battle worth waging. And we want to thank you for joining us this morning to share that with our listening audience. This has been a fascinating show. Got lots of great comments and responses, and we thank you again for the work that you are doing in the world. Want to just let our listeners know that if you are on our website, you'll see that we have a hyperlink there to Naliwe's website. And if people have comments, questions, want to follow Naliwe's work, her website is Noliwe, which is how you spell her first name, Noliwe Rooks, Rooks.com. Thank you again, Naliwe, and we would say to those of you who are listening, we hope you will join us next Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And in the meantime, remember to think and grow rich.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-302002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-302002.